Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Cynthia McClure. Hello, Cynthia, and hello, listener.
Hello, Ursula, and hello to you, the listener. Today, we will hear from an Ames Junior High School student who recently won a prestigious award for her writing.
Also, we're going to look ahead to the upcoming 4th of July celebrations, which are special this year because we will also be celebrating the 150th anniversary of the founding of Ames. Nate Logsdon from Maximum Ames is going to tell us what we can expect by the way of entertainment. Maximum Ames has booked some exciting music.
And in celebration of the 150th anniversary, we are going to look back as well. In the next 2 weeks leading up to the 4th of July festivities, we want to dedicate a little bit of local talk to Ames history. Today, we will share recollections from a respected member of the Ames community, Terry Adams. But first, let's take a look at the weather.
Well, we installed 2 rain barrels on Saturday night, and by Sunday morning, they were full. So that was interesting and exciting to watch that work. The city helped pay for that, and I think they're going to be coming in July 2nd to talk to us about the program where they help people buy rain barrels. Today there will be about a 50% chance of shower and thunderstorms, and mainly these are expected before 4 p.m. A slight chance of rain would continue tonight, but tomorrow it should be mostly sunny with still a balmy high of around 81.
Yay! Yay! Summer is coming.
So, Cynthia, over the weekend, you had a chance to interview the high school student here in Ames who won a writing award. How did that go?
Great. I interviewed Ella Bartlett, who has won a national recognition for her writing that only about 1% of her peers in the United States achieve. She went to New York and received the award, the National Medal in Scholastic Arts and Writing, for her flash fiction piece, Vertebrae.
I've actually never heard of what a flash fiction piece is, so let's listen to the interview and find out.
This is Cynthia McClure. I'm at the KHOI Studios with Ella Bartlett, who has won an award for her writing at Ames High. This is national recognition for a piece of work that she's done. Hello, Ella.
Hello.
You want to describe your work and the award?
Sure. It is a flash fiction piece, which is a very, very short story titled Vertebrae, and it is about a stillbirth, about kind of the couple's coping with this tragic event.
You wrote it with, if you were the person this is happening to, it's very kind of an intimate piece.
Yes, even though it is third person omniscient, it gets into the mind of the characters a lot, yes.
You're a junior in high school. How do you get there? This is a deep piece.
Obviously, I haven't experienced a stillbirth, and thank goodness for that, but I know what it's like to feel loss, and I translate that, and I had these two characters, and I said, you know, how can I make them feel more pain? And that, as a writer, is something that I think we should do, because characters show themselves most through tough events. I didn't know about stillbirths at all. My teacher, Mr. Brecky, actually helped me get in contact with a medical doctor who did this kind of thing, not daily, but dealt with this sort of thing. So talking to other people really helped.
So this is a big event for you to reach out and try to find these people. And your educators, who has helped you in this process of discovering the story?
Well, it really has been my teacher, Mr. Brecky. He's my first reader on almost all my stories, and he really helps me when I have questions. And also some of my friends from writing camps that I've been to. It was hard at first to share my stories with other people, but over the summers, I've gone to the Iowa Young Writers Studio and the Sewanee Young Writers Conference.
Oh, where are those at?
The Iowa Young Writers Studio is in the University of Iowa, and I went there for 2 weeks over the summer, and then the Sewanee one was in Tennessee. And that was also 2 weeks, and it was a blast. You just get to meet a lot of people, and the thing that I learned most there was that you have to share and be comfortable with sharing your work with other people who are passionate about writing too.
So does that help you, having other people see your work in the rough stages?
Yes. Yes, because when you're writing and it's all your heart and it's all, you know, like, oh, you know, this is just piece of my, I don't know.
a piece of your creative spirit.
Yes. Yes. And then you're kind of blind to like the little things. Like I once wrote, like, the sun looks like a lunar eclipse or something like that. And then they were like, oh, you know, suns don't do that. And I was like, oh, I didn't see that. You know, like the little things and also the big things, talking with other people really helps.
So having other people's perspective expands upon the story.
And makes
it better?
Yes, but it's also once you learn that, it's also, you have to understand that it's your piece of writing and you can do what you want with it. It is your piece. And although like many, many people have wonderful suggestions, you have to choose the ones that you think fit best because it is your piece.
Wow. Well, it is a form of intimacy to have somebody read your work, and it could be kind of tough to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was for me at first.
So what advice would you give to other people writing pieces, regardless of their age? Because you're a junior in high school. You're going to be a senior this next year.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. So what have you learned in this process?
I guess I've learned that some people give really good feedback and some people give really bad feedback. But you have to listen to everybody and you have to really consider it and you have to say, would it benefit my piece if I took this or if I didn't? And how would that go?
So you put the work first.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to. And, Mr. Brecky talks a lot about this in his class. He says you have to also distance yourself from the piece. You can't say this is a part of my soul. I mean, it's a creation of your soul, but it's separate. And if someone says, you know, like, oh, I liked this piece better than the previous one you wrote, it doesn't mean anything about you as a person. It just means that you need to work on a little more.
Well, you know, there are a lot of different writers out there and a lot of different writing styles. And like what you said, put the piece first.
Mm-hmm.
Ella, would you like to read your flash fiction piece for our audience?
Yes. Okay. It's called Vertebrae. It was the day they came back from the hospital and she sat in the passenger seat looking at the small white calluses that bubbled on the top of her palm, biting them off with her teeth. James parked her car in the middle of their driveway, got out, and crossed the street to where his own car was parked, where he unlocked it and then drove off. She remembers how he had left the keys in her car, ticking against the side of the car wheel. It was early spring, late in the morning, and her stomach still hurt too. The first thing she thought about was sleep, not able to criticize James for coming home during the two nights she was in the obstetrics wing. Then she thought about how much he was waiting to leave after this whole thing was done. She got out of the car and went inside and went to bed. Now his car is back. Since he left, she has slept in this house alone, but his car is back. She parks her own car right behind his and comes into the door. He is sitting with his elbows on his knees, legs spread over the air vent in the carpet. He is facing the wall. The AC is set to 56 degrees. She coughs. She takes her coat off and sits on the couch in front of the TV, crosses her legs, puts her palms against each other, and sticks them between her thighs like she's cold. "I'm cold," she says, and waits for him to say something. He doesn't turn around. It's just his bare vertebrae, the small protruding bumps under his skin, sharp like a fish's. His green plaid boxers that he's had since before they started dating bring out his paleness, and she thinks about how the baby didn't cry when it came out, how it had no fingers, purplish skin, vertebrae exposed to the open air. She says, "You've come back." She wants to ask him where he went. She glances at the red calluses on the palm of her left hand. Everything was given away except for the flat, pink, stuffed animal rabbit the size of a pillow because it was hers when she was young and she was saving it for the baby. After he left last week, she loaded everything into the crib and didn't even bother looking for the receipts. She would fill a coffee cup full of gin and mix it with tomato juice to make her feel skinny and drink while piling purple jumpsuits and binkies in the bottom of the crib. She took it to the Goodwill yesterday. Now he has come back, and she realizes he is sitting on her rabbit as a cushion. She asks, "Do you want..." "There's none in the fridge," he says. She had meant to go to the store, but other things had taken up the spaces in her mind. She didn't really think that much about alcohol, at least she didn't want to, but for some reason, James's presence reminded her. He reminded her of last month, after she got so frustrated at him for something, but he wouldn't say anything or argue back. She tried, she took his money and bit it in between her teeth, but she couldn't make him argue back, and she imbibed half a can before she remembered. "I'm sorry it didn't turn out right," he says. That's what he said on the way home last week. He said it twice. He took a big breath and said it, and they sat in the car in the dark, blaming each other. Nothing changed. Maybe because both of them hadn't really wanted it was why it didn't stay alive. The doctors even put it in an isolate incubator, but it couldn't stay warm. No, you're not, she tells him. She looks at the back of his neck. It's funny not seeing his lips moving. Maybe you fell or something. I didn't do anything. I tried not to do anything to hurt it, she says to the blank TV screen. See, she ate tuna fish every Saturday on her lunch dates with her mother, but one day her mother pointed to her belly, which was bulging and pressed up against the edge of the metal rim of the bar counter, and asked her if she knew about mercury levels in fish. He said, maybe you just didn't try hard enough not to hurt it. It wasn't even an it, it was a she, with blood. She had blood. The blood was warm at first, but when it came into the air, the blood just stopped. The doctors took it away to try to fix it, but they couldn't make it breathe. They told her they couldn't make it breathe and it was too small, and when they gave it back to her to hold, she closed her eyes. It was very purple. She felt like throwing up. She couldn't hold it. And what do you do when you're 24 years old and you lose something that you thought could be beating with your blood, even if you didn't want it? Have you seen that pack of playing cards I got in Chicago? He asks. I didn't touch them. I think I lost them, he says, dreamlike. James, it is so cold in here. Why did you set it this low? The saliva in the back of her throat feels sticky. She swallows and imagine it sinking all the way down her spine, through each bone in her back and into her abdomen, and then down her legs like a cold chill, like something that's supposed to stay inside of her. She thinks about fish. She asks, so are you staying? The TV screen is big and black in front of her. He lifts his head up to the ceiling and the skin on the back of his neck bunches. I don't know, he says, adjusting the rabbit pillow under his bottom. He says it twice. I don't know, because maybe he really doesn't and she doesn't either.
That was the flash fiction piece by Ella Bartlett. Ella has won national recognition for her work as a writer. She's a junior in high school at Ames High. Thank you, Ella.
Yeah, thank you.
What other works do you have? Are you writing anything currently?
I am, actually, yeah. See, right now I'm editing a story about the 9/11 towers, and it's kind of a father-daughter relationship story, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you're a junior in high school. You're going to be a senior.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you want to go with this? I mean, you've gotten some recognition, and you really seem to enjoy this, and you're good at it.
Thank you.
What do you want to do?
Well, I definitely want to continue writing. It's been my dream to go out east to school somewhere and study English, and I don't know, in the future, I see myself teaching and maybe writing on the side. I love inspiring others, and I just saw how happy and how enthusiastic Mr. Brecky, my educator, was when he helped me. I took his class in like 10th grade, and then throughout the last couple of years, he's really helped me. I really think that inspiring others would be a dream.
So Joe Brecky, Ames High English teacher, who is well known for his work with the kids in bringing out The Great Gatsby,
mm-hmm.
and making it a kind of a live action role playing storytelling event with the high school. He's inspired you to be just like him. You know, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you hope to be able to do the same thing and just create that legacy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that you would like to share with our listening audience about being a young writer or being a writer? I don't even want to put you a young writer because that'll limit you and that'll limit the message. Mm-hmm. So is there anything else you'd like to share with our listening audience?
I would say write every day, and even if it's bad, even if it's you don't think it's going anywhere, being a writer not only means to read and to study and take the classes and everything, but also you have to find time to write by yourself and really, even if it's, you know, like 20 minutes or 50 minutes every night, that little bit helps tremendously.
So just practice, practice, practice.
Mm-hmm. Also, when these recognitions, and it's not like if you don't win these recognitions, you're bad, but it's, you just have to keep trying. And when you do win these kind of things, when I went to Scholastic, I went to New York City, actually, for the Scholastic Award, and I just met so many people who are passionate not only about their writing and their art, but so many other things. I met people who wanted to major in biology and who are just, but they're passionate and they are able to convey feelings through a type of artwork, be that writing or painting or poetry or whatnot.
So find your bliss.
Mm-hmm.
Find your bliss and run with it. Mm-hmm. Are there any writing groups that you're participating with locally that people could get involved with?
The Ames Public Library has a writing group, I think, on the second or third Sunday of every month and at 2 p.m. And that's definitely been a fun spot for me and the writing community as well.
So look for your local organizations and do what you can.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. This is Ella Bartlett. She is a nationally recognized writer and a high school student. And, you know, we're going to see where you go. You're local, so we're going to be very proud.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ella.
Thank you so much.
If you've just tuned in, we have been listening to an interview with Ella Bartlett, who won a national medal in scholastic arts and writing, an award that only about 1% of her peers in the United States achieve. She received the award for her flash fiction piece, Vertebrae. You're listening to Local Talk, and I am one of your hosts today, Cynthia McClure. I'm with Ursula Rutenberg.
Thank you for that interview, Cynthia, and thank you for sharing your work with us, Ella, and for representing Ames so well nationally. Appreciate it.
Ursula, you were also able to record an interview this weekend with Nate Logsdon. Is that right?
Yes. Nate was kind enough to come in and talk to me about the upcoming celebrations plan for the 4th of July weekend. For those of you who don't know Nate, he is one of the owners of Maximum Ames, our own local music festival booking and recording company. Maximum Ames booked the music planned for the street party for downtown Ames on the weekend of the 4th and the 5th of July.
Let's listen to what he has to say from that interview.
I'm speaking with Nate Logsdon, one of the owners of Maximum Ames Music Festival and also manager of DG's Tap House. Maximum Ames booked the bands that are going to be playing on the 4th and 5th celebrations here on Main Street. Welcome to KHOI, Nate, and tell us about what's going to happen.
Thanks for having me, Ursula. We're really excited. On July 4th and 5th, there will be tons of family-friendly activities out on Main Street. Multiple blocks of Main Street will be closed for this event. We were hired by the city to book the entertainment for the Danfoss main stage, which will be right on Main Street.
So when are there going to be concerts?
July 4th and 5th, starting at noon on both days.
And then how late will it go?
It'll go until 9:30 on the 4th and the 5th. The headliner on July 4th is Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars, outstanding African ensemble.
I'm a fan.
Mm-hmm.
When there was an attempt to overthrow the government, there was a civil war in Sierra Leone from 1991 to 2002. And the resulting war lasted 11 years, really enveloped the whole country, leaving 50,000 people dead.
The founding members of the band began playing together while they were refugees in a camp in Guinea. And from there, they formed the current lineup of the ensemble. And they have become a Grammy-winning, internationally touring band that plays tons of festivals and then using music to both form a career for themselves, but also to spread a message of positivity and hope. So there's a relatively famous documentary about them and their experiences. It's pretty incredible that these gentlemen that are witnesses to atrocity, they play a music that is so celebratory of life and is very warm and welcoming and something that celebrates the beauty of the world. So that's what these guys represent. On top of that, they have just one of the most outstanding live shows that you can see. I mean, they're incredible performers. They play really, really fun music.
Describe what their music sounds like.
They play a music that is kind of reggae inflected. In America, we commonly would call their music Afropop. It's very bright. It has multiple rhythms all going at once. Very, very danceable. Very, very fun to listen to. Beautiful guitar playing, multiple different percussive instruments performing throughout the song. The band is also just really, really engaging in performance. They do choreographed dances. They take turns taking solos and also taking turns being the featured dancer. They'll take turns moving to center stage, playing different percussive instruments and dancing. So it's an extraordinary band. And
it's really a show.
It's really a show. And one reason we thought of them, you know, it's the 150th anniversary of Ames. And on top of just being a great show for a street party, Ames is home to a very wide variety of cultures and people from all over the world. This band taps that heritage of Ames as being very multi-ethnic, a place that is welcoming to people from all over the world. And as well, we've also had lots of distinguished scholars from Africa that have worked at and currently work at Iowa State. So they represent the multi-ethnicity of Ames that we celebrate.
How many people are in the band?
I believe that they're coming through with a 6-piece ensemble.
Mm-hmm. And they're all men?
Yes.
When are they going to play?
They're the headlining slot at 8 o'clock on July 4th. And then the next day, there's also a full day of music.
Who else is playing?
The headliners on July 5th are also very exciting and are world-class talent. The main stage headliner on July 5th is Robert Randolph and the Family Band. Robert Randolph is on the Rolling Stones list of the 100 greatest guitarists of all time. He started out in gospel music and then ended up forming his own band, which incorporates a lot of you could call it a blues band, but it also incorporates a lot of elements of gospel, roots rock, all types of American music tradition, and is also just really funky, really, really easy to dance to. And they're just absolutely world class. And Robert Randolph is considered to be one of the premier slide guitar players in the world.
He's an American
guitar player, and he'll be here with his full band on July 5th. Being able to see Robert Randolph and the Family Band is a great, great deal, and is something that people will come from all over the Midwest to see. And on the same day, opening for Robert Randolph and the Family Band is another world-class talent, Buckwheat Zydeco, one of the premier Zydeco artists in the world. He's been performing traditional New Orleans style of music for over 40 years. He's a highly accomplished accordion player, and he plays if you kind of picture in your mind what you would think of as, you know, New Orleans street festival, up-tempo music. This is the premier act in that genre, and has been a flag bearer for Zydeco for his entire career. So,
describe Zydeco a little bit.
Zydeco is it has a kind of a beat that maybe is a little bit similar to polka in a way. It's kind of oompa oompa oompa. It's very fast, so it's also polyrhythmic. There will be multiple rhythms going on at the same time. Many types of Zydeco, including this band, are accordion led. It's a traditional style of Louisiana music, but there's a lot of crossover between Zydeco and funk, or Zydeco and rock and roll. And so it's just a really fun, danceable style of music that celebrates life.
It's often associated with French, right?
Yes. Louisiana's history is so much about, you know, this combination of French and Southern elements and kind of a Cajun culture. Mm-hmm. Buckwheat Zydeco is from that culture. He's from Louisiana. And they have exported so much of what we consider American musical traditions. So New Orleans has been a hotbed for creativity and music for all of American history. That's where jazz came from. That's where funk came from. And Zydeco is another one of these indigenous musical forms that originated in Louisiana. And mm-hmm. we're going to have one of the internationally recognized progenitors of this form with no tickets needed on the street in Ames to celebrate 150th anniversary.
Great. What else?
And then on both stages, on both days, there's a lineup of local talent. So we wanted to represent a diverse group of the type of music that comes out of Ames and artists that play here now. So that includes bands like Vinyl Vagabonds, a wonderful blues and classic rock band. They'll be playing on July 5th. Holly and the Night Owls, which is a superb 3-piece jazz-inflected pop group from here in Ames. There is BJ Fleming, who is a longtime Southern blues guitarist who lived in Ames for a long time. She doesn't live in Ames anymore, but she comes through on tour a lot and has lots of friends and history here. There's a great roots rock band called Great Caesar's Goat that will be performing. There's the Ames High School Jazz Ensemble, the Jazzy Lads. They'll be playing, as well as a number of other local artists that will be supporting these world-class talents on the main stage.
That's great. It's a great combination.
Yep.
I'm speaking with Nate Loxton, who's with Maximum Ames. We're talking about the 150th anniversary celebrations, which are going to be happening on the 4th of July on the east end of Main Street, right?
The Danfoss main stage will be on the east end of Main Street. The festival celebrations will be on multiple blocks of downtown Ames.
And we're talking about concerts on the main stage?
Correct.
Starting at noon on the 4th and the 5th?
Correct.
And going probably till around 9 or 10 o'clock at night?
9:30 each night.
Okay. A mixture of local bands and some real world-class big acts to just create a real combination of different sounds, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Nate, you have been running Maximum Ames Music Festival now for about 4 years, 5 years, is that
this
right?
September will be the 4th year of Maximum Ames Music Festival.
Yeah. Has it changed at all? Is it different doing it now than it was 4 years ago?
It's a lot different. Every year we learn a lot. Every year we kind of try out different formats for the festival, different styles. This is a multi-genre festival. You know, we're not easily pigeonholed. Each year our headliners have represented many different styles.
So that's something you're going for, is a diversity of types of music?
That's correct. That's correct. The one thing we celebrate is that is how many different types of music exist in Iowa. And then also the interests of Ames music fans are extremely diverse. We really strive to have an event that is appealing to people of all ages, of all different backgrounds, and all over Ames. One thing that's going to be different this year that we haven't done before is that the entire festival will be located in downtown Ames.
Now we're talking about the Maximum Ames Music Festival, which happens in September.
That's correct, September 25th through the 28th.
When there's just a whole lot of music in town, a lot of different bands, and usually one or two headliners. And you're saying this year it's going to be all focused on downtown Ames.
The entire festival will take place in downtown, and that's a difference from previous years.
Why are you doing that?
The main reason is that customer feedback is that this festival would be more appealing if it was walkable. If you think about it, having everything in one location, that cuts down the hard choices you have to make. In the past, we would do a campus town and a downtown edition, obviously in Ames, those are on different sides of town. Festival goers would more or less have to choose a side of town that they were going to witness on any night of the festival. This year, those choices will not be as difficult because mm-hmm. you'll be in walking distance from all of the venues. And so you'll be able to go from venue to venue at will, looking at the schedule, timing out how you want to program your day. And you'll be able to catch a lot of different things all in one day without having to worry about, oh, well, now I got to get in my car and drive across town.
Mm-hmm. We're talking right now about the Maximum Ames Music Festival, which will happen in September. But before then is going to be the 4th of July and the 5th of July, which will be a major music event on Main Street, as well as a festival up and down Main Street, and also, I think, here on Douglas Avenue as well.
That's correct. The music, in fact, is only one relatively small piece of a elaborate multi-day celebration of Ames. And that multi-day celebration is only one piece of a year-long celebration of the 150th anniversary of Ames. Mm-hmm. So we're really proud to partner with the city on this because we so much love our hometown. We love our downtown community, and we are proud to run a business here. And Ames is a great place to live, great place to work. We love the history of this town, and we're really honored to be a small part of it for this event.
Okay, well, thank you for organizing it and bringing such really amazing bands.
Thank you to Local Talk and KHOI Community Radio for providing a voice for the heart of Iowa.
Do you have a website with the bands on it?
Ames150.com has descriptions of the bands as well as all the information about all the events going on during the 4th of July weekend and a full schedule of the music as well as all of the events. So that's Ames150.com.
.com. Thank you, Nate. I've been speaking with Nate Loxton from Maximum Ames Music Festival. And also manager of DG's Tap House. Thanks for coming by, Nate, and telling us what's going to happen on the 4th and 5th.
Thanks for having me, Ursula.
Living like a refugee, it's not easy. You see, I just took all the problems, the suffering of the people, and then make a song of it.
You left your country to seek refuge in another man's land. You left your country to seek refuge in another man's land. You will be confronted by strange dialects. You will be fed with unusual diets. You got to sleep in a tarpaulin house, which is so hot. You got to sleep on a tarpaulin mat, which is so cold. Oh, we on time.
Even like a refugee,
I'm
not. It's not easy.
Living like a refugee is not easy. Oh, we on time. Living like a refugee,
I'm not. It's not easy.
It's really not easy.
Living like a refugee is not easy.
I want to hear my solos.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm Ursula Rudenberg here with Cynthia McClure. We are your hosts for today's show. The music we were just listening to was Living Like a Refugee by the Sierra Leone Refugee All-Stars. As Nate Loxton just explained in this last interview, they will be performing in Ames on the weekend of the 4th and the 5th at the downtown Ames Street Fair, along with a lot of other great acts. We will be providing links to information on events and music on our website, khoifm.org, where we will also post the audio from this Local Talk show and all our other Local Talk shows and links to the information. As Nate mentioned, the website for finding out the schedule for events on that weekend is ames150.com. We'll post that on our website as well.
Nate also mentioned that Ames is celebrating its sesquicentennial this year. We want to do our part at KHOI and honor Ames' history. And so we are highlighting some of the interesting people, stories, and events that have made Ames what it is today. We would like to share an interview recorded by KHOI reporter Tom Beal, who is a retired ISU journalism professor. He spoke with Terry Adams about what it was like growing up in Ames.
Hi, this is Tom Beal, and we're delighted to have with us a member of one of the best-known families in Ames. I think everyone is familiar with the Adams family. And this is Terry Adams, whose family for many years operated the Adams Funeral Home. But Terry has been a figure in Ames since he grew up here in the 1940s and 50s. And so for today's program, I thought it would be fun to talk to Terry about what it was like to be a young person growing up in Ames back in the post-war era and what downtown Ames was all about. So, Terry, thanks for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You grew up in Ames. Your family, in fact, on both your mother and father's side of the families, came here really when Ames was just getting started.
My great-grandparents came here from Ohio in 1869, bringing with them their, seven children, all quite young. And my great-grandmother's brothers came here in 1861 and 1862, Milton and Walter Evans. And Walter ended up being third mayor of Ames, and Milton was a member of the legislature early on. And the first location that I know specifically my great-grandparents lived was up northeast of Ames. You go up Dayton Park Road to the four-way stop sign, go just east of the trailer park, and there was a farm there, and that's where my great-grandfather and his wife lived, and that's where he died in January of 1887. In February, his widow moved to town and bought the property at 807 Douglas. And then when her son, Milton J. Evans, got married, she sold the property to his wife, Lynn Irene Chevalier. And then Milton and MJ, they called him MJ, and his wife lived there and had all of their children in that home. My dad and his two brothers and sister were all born in that home.
Wow, is that house still standing there?
That house is still standing. My great-grandmother bought it. I have the copy of the sales from the time she bought it until my grandparents sold it. But they sold it in 1924. That's when MJ bought the funeral home, which was at that time a fraternity, and the fraternity was moving out to campus. So he was planning to build a new business, and that building went for sale, and he gave up the idea of building a new business building and bought the funeral home, which, of course, was the original Greeley home here in town.
It's quite an amazing structure. It's quite distinctive. So from 1924 on, the Adams Funeral Home has been on that corner.
Yes.
You grew up in the family, and I think you were saying that you had your regular crew of friends from probably elementary school days on. But as you grew up, being a member of this prominent family in Ames that operated a funeral business may have created a little special situation for you. You were telling me that the kids had a nickname for you.
Digger. That came off a radio show, actually. Digby O'Dell, but they called him Digger on the radio show. Got that picked up more from my college classmates, but it kind of filtered back here a little bit.
Did you actually work in the home with your family?
Yes. once I could drive, the funeral home used to rent out their folding chairs to people that needed them for parties, and my job was to deliver the chairs in the pickup and then pick up the chairs when they were done and bring them back. And that was my first start there. Then I was doing some yard work for the funeral home, and that was about it. It wasn't until after my graduation from the university and my serving time in the military that I came back and decided to get into the funeral business. So I got into the business and ended up buying it.
Well, it's a distinctive building. I always thought that would be a challenge to keep that structure up with the ornate roof and all of that. Was it a challenge?
Well, one time I wanted to get it put on the Register of Historic Places, but I was turned down because my dad and his brother, Clint, had a fake brick surface put over the old original bricks, which were eroding away. They were an old, softer brick, and they were giving way to the weather.
It occurred to me that you would have some interesting memories about growing up in Ames. This was before Ames had a North Grand Mall and all of the big box stores that have come to the city in recent years. Most of the retail activities and even personal services like doctors and optometrists and so on were all located in the Main Street area.
Now, that's true. My own doctor was in 405 Douglas, which is a door you go in and then you climb the stairs to get to the second floor. And it was above the Union National Bank. The building still carries a name on it, but it's not Union National Bank anymore. It hasn't been for decades. Dr. Piercy was a neighbor of ours on Ridgewood. He was on the second floor down on Main Street.
This was before we had iTunes and so on. So if you wanted a record, you actually went down and bought a record at the record shop and listened to it. I think did they not have booths where you could actually listen to the records?
They did. You could take the record, put it on, and listen to it. Perhaps when Eschbox owned it.
What were some of the other businesses that a person would see as they walked down Main Street in the 1940s and 50s?
Well, on the east end of Main Street, on the north side, would have been where the Vision Bank is now, would have been the Maidrite. The Capitol Theater is right in that area. My dad called that the cheapest babysitter in town. We would go there right after lunch on Saturday, see the double feature and the serial and the previews, and then get back home just in time for dinner.
And how much would it cost, you remember?
Yeah, 10 cents to get in and a nickel for the candy. So 15 cents. That's 15 cents for taking care of us all Saturday afternoon.
Do you remember any of the movies that you saw at the Capitol?
Oh, they were just old West black and white westerns, Hopalong Cassidy and
Roy Rogers, Gene Autry.
Yeah, Gene Autry, yeah, that bunch.
Well, as you continue walking down Main Street back in those days, what would you have seen?
Well, that's a little bit of a challenge. I have to stop and think about that some. So.
Well, I know Penny's at the far end of the Main Street was still there, and I think Yonkers.
Where Eschbox is now. Not Eschbox, where
the town center, I think, is where Penny's was, isn't it?
I was thinking it was Everest Flowers. But no, that was Sears Roebuck, I guess.
But in any case, you could find virtually everything you wanted right on Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so you're a young person growing up. What did you do besides go to the Capitol Theater and maybe the Collegiate for fun? Well, you didn't have a car, right? Or how old were you when you got a car?
I could drive the family car once I got my driver's license.
Remember what you had as a family car?
It was there were two. My dad drove a Buick, my mother drove a Chevrolet, so I could drive one of those. But my driver's ed, I remember, because Gerald Seelert was our teacher, and we had, I think, six of us in the class, and he called us all by our nicknames except two of the girls who were taking driver's ed. One of them was Kathleen Thomas, whose nickname was Honey, and the other one was Leonard Orschletter, whose nickname was Sugar. So he didn't call them Honey and Sugar. He called them Miss Thomas and Miss Shaletter. But my very first driving experience was getting in the car. Well, we rode in the car with Gerald Seelert to Lee Street facing Brookside Park right along Brookridge. And I was the first one to drive because they did it alphabetically. I got in. I had to put it in gear and back up half a block and back into the alley between Brookridge and Ridgewood. And that was a familiar territory because we lived in Ridgewood at that time.
Now, why did you have to back up?
Well, that was what he wanted me to do for the first thing.
Oh, for your practice driving.
Yeah, first practice.
And you didn't hit anything.
Didn't hit anything.
Did you get your license then?
Oh, finally, when I got done with driver's ed and waiting for my birthday, when I was old enough, I went to get my license. The license then was issued in the basement of the band shell. Unfortunately, being a brand
that
new
was
one.
That was the place you went to get your driver's license?
Mm-hmm.
In the band shell park?
In the basement of the band shell. Problem was, I went in there once I had my birthday, and they said, nope, we can't do it. I said, why not? Oh, because you have to take a test drive with us, and it's snowy out. We're not going to let you drive in the snow for the first driving. So I had to wait until the snow was cleared.
Now, how old were you when this happened? Had you been 16?
I think so.
Okay. But anyway, so you didn't get your license because it was snowing.
Yeah, I had to wait till the beginning of the next year. Of course, my birthday is the 30th so of December, so I had to wait for the next year.
Oh, that's frustrating.
Yeah.
Well, you had some friends that you hung out with probably in middle school and high school. I noticed that you've been involved in so many activities in the Ames. One of them you told me about had to do with a German polka band. And how did you get – because I know you play with the Ames Municipal Band, and so how did you get into the polka music?
Okay, well, that was a case of listening to polka music as a kid at my grandparents over in Boone. And when I finally bought
They had a hand-crank Victrola or something.
Yeah, hand-crank Victrola, 78 RPM record, listening to the Beer Barrel Polka. And then I'd turn it over and play what was on the backside. That's the one I remember most, of course. My folks made me take instrumental lessons in 5th and 6th grade at Roosevelt, and I was not excited to do that. They borrowed a clarinet from my cousins and had me play that, and once I was done with 6th grade, I thought, boy, I'm done with that stuff. I can do some fun things now. Got to junior high, and the folks insisted I was going to take more instrumental lessons, so I borrowed another clarinet, and fortunately, the junior high director was the same as the high school director, Richard Day, or Dick Day, and by the time I was with my third year with him, I took my own money I'd saved up and bought my own clarinet. And bought my set of German band books, The Hungry Five, and I had some classmates tell me it was a crazy thing to do. That was horrid music. Well, actually, we got formed and had a lot of fun playing. We played for parties and...
So you had your own little band. What did you call it? Do you remember?
We just called ourselves The Hungry Five.
The Hungry Five. And you played polka music entirely or other
things? Well, polkas, anything that was German, waltz, just various kinds of music. I still have the books, the original books.
So your interest in music continued, said in fact that you went on local radio and did a live music show.
Yeah, went into KASI at one time, and they had this, A.C. Anderson had a program called A.C. from Casey, which he played polka music and that kind of music. One time they had us go up there, and we played some live music. We also did some performing for some of the school party functions, tried to have fun doing what we did.
Well, live radio, that's our doing live radio music must have been a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Because so many things now are recorded. You went on, though, to keep your hand in music and to keep your interest in music. And so you've been with the Ames Municipal Band how long?
Well, I first played in the Ames Municipal Band in 1951. I was still a junior high student. I have a picture of myself wearing the high school band uniform. So Dick Day had... Those of us that were far enough along had some of us join the Ames High Marching Band back then, playing, of course, for the football games and so forth. So I've been in the municipal band since 1951, and we have our own German band now, the Umpameisters. We play some of the same music we do then, and then we have our tuba player, sousaphone player, has done some of his own transposing and gotten other music we can play, some good arrangements he's made. So we play out of Kate. We always play a pre-concert at the band shell during the summer.
I keep referring to the fact that you grew up in Ames because it's a special thing, I think, about smaller towns. Now our town has grown up so much, but it was a small town when you were living here for much of the time. And here you have spent your entire life here. And so there's obviously something about the town, not just the fact that your parents on both sides of your family came here long ago, but rather there's something about the place that obviously you really like. You could have moved away. What has kept you here in Ames?
Well, I just simply liked Ames. I liked everything about it, and I could find nothing to make me go elsewhere. Once I got done with the university, I had, about 8 months, I think, until I had to report for military duty. Spent 2 years, 1 month, and 22 days with the 1st Battle Group, 5th Infantry, down at Fort Wiley, Kansas, although our training was down in Georgia. Got done with the military and came back home trying to decide what to do. Actually, I had a side job, started off in my first year before I started junior high school, Central Junior High School, and that was a fellow from Collegiate came over, saw me in the funeral home yard, and asked me if I could like a job. And
we should explain that Collegiate Manufacturing Company was a pretty big business in Ames for a long time.
Yes, it was.
It manufactured T-shirts and things related to the university.
T-shirts, caps, stuffed animals. In fact, I used to have a red Colt with my name Terry stitched in the side, I think somewhere. I think my folks might have thrown it away.
Their factory for a long time was located in what is now the Octagon Building.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then later they had a building on the edge of town where they manufactured products.
Yeah, they went to the old canning company, I call it there. But my job there, you get a nice, hot, humid day. I went down to the basement and got to fill the trays with water, turn the gas burners on underneath, get the water hot and steaming, and I would put the caps on blocks with their fitting to their size, put them in and steam them, bring them out, let them dry a little bit, then fold them and sort them, and then so they could get them shipped out to the various colleges and universities that needed them. And one of my side jobs was to take crumbled cork and put it in the stuffing machines for the people that were stuffing stuffed animals.
Oh, well, I think we probably ought to point out again how hot it was the day you were down there doing that. Terry Adams is our guest today. We're talking about what it was like to grow up in Ames in the 1940s and 50s. Terry is a member of the Ames Municipal Band, but also you're president of the commission that hires public service.
Well, Civil Service Commission.
That's what I was trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Chairman, so, not president. Chairman.
Pardon me, chairman, and you've served in that job for many years.
Since October of 1981, I'm still on. And actually, I got the job. Paul Goodlin was the mayor, and he saw me in front of the post office in October and asked me if I would ever consider serving on the Civil Service Commission. I said, what's that? So he took me to another member of the commission who told me a little bit about it. And I said, yeah, I could try it. The situation was Red Stenberg had been a member, and he stepped down because he wanted to do business with the city and couldn't do that being on the commission. So I filled in there. That's how I got on, and been there ever since.
Part of growing up in a town like Ames is that you feel it is a citizen's responsibility to contribute where you can to make the town work and to make it a pleasant place to live. You were telling about one side of your family. Maybe you might want to talk about the other side of your family a little bit.
All three Adams brothers, Chev, Clint, and my dad, lived on the same block on Ridgewood on the west side. In 1941, Clint's in-laws helped him build his house on Orchard Drive, 1204 Orchard Drive, and he moved out, of course. Neighbors coming in were Howard Shorey and his family, and Howard's son, Dick Shorey, being a leader of a percussion ensemble in the Chicago area, he's made recordings and concerts galore. Been a delight to hear him. He was a 1950 Ames High grad and a 1954 Iowa State grad. I have two of his CDs, which I've loaned to this station, KHOI.
Terry, what year did you graduate from Ames High?
1955. That was the year that the basketball team was state champion.
Yeah, it was a big deal for that time.
Yeah, I was in the pep band, and we were playing the Globetrotters' favorite song, whatever that was. Anyway, the high school team wanted us to play that song. Dick Day said, well, we'll play it as long as you win. Well, we played it all the way through to the championship. So that was a nice thing to do. Well, there was one drawback. When you get into high school, the two junior highs, Central and Welch, all had the same students in the high school. And I ended up dating a former Welch student. She lived out, of course, west. I had to take her home, and I'd drive out there, and I'd get there just in time to see the train slowly backing coal into the Iowa State power plant. We had to sit there and just wait until I finally got the tracks cleared.
Well, that does remind me that at one time the passenger trains ran through Ames, and you could catch a train to Chicago or points west if you wanted to. And did you do much train travel out of Ames?
My mother did. My grandfather, her father, my maternal grandfather, was superintendent of the Northwestern. So she would go down to the depot in the morning. The eastbound train would come in. She'd hop on board where her mother was, the wife of the superintendent. They'd ride into Cedar Rapids, spend the day shopping, and then ride the train back at the end of the day. That was not every day, but that happened on occasion. And I remember my dad taking me down there with the hearse. They would unload freight cars. They'd stop and unload freight cars that were connected to the passenger train, and he would have caskets shipped in that way for the funeral home, and we'd have to load those up and carry them, drive them back to the funeral home then. Oh. And then one time I had a fraternity brother when I was at the University of Iowa, and he took me up to Cedar Rapids, dropped me off at the depot, and I rode the, I call it the late night run, home, got my home by train, and then I walked home from that.
The train travel was really wonderful, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was. I missed that. I made the comment when we had a tour of Europe when I went to a Rotary convention, and I was looking at the trains in Great Britain, and I said to somebody, I see a lot of passenger trains here. I don't see much freight. And he says, oh, you mean goods wagons? He says, we run those at night when people don't travel as much.
Wow. Well, that's certainly not the case
here.
You
go all over Europe, and there's good passenger service. I think we should catch up.
Well, it's too bad we lost so much of the rail service. It'd be really nice if you could just sit back in an easy chair, read the paper, and relax while you travel from point to point. Terry, you've reminisced a bit today about what life was like in Ames in the 40s and 50s, and I know there are many more stories that you could tell as we look at specific things that have happened over the years. But I think save a little for the next time, and I do appreciate your taking time to talk to us about what it was like to be a young person in Ames.
Well, I love the town. I see no reason to leave it. So,
well, thanks again.
Thank you.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I've been hosting today's show with Cynthia McClure. And that was Terry Adams. Tom Beal was speaking with Terry about Ames history.
We are spending some time looking back at Ames history on KHOI in anticipation of the sesquicentennial, the 150th birthday celebrations that will be greatly enhanced with the 4th of July weekend celebrations. Nate Logsdon spoke with us earlier in the show about the street festival that will be happening in downtown Ames, especially the great music that is going to be happening.
We also want to thank Ames High student Ella Bartlett for sharing her flash fiction piece, Vertebrae, that won the National Scholastic Writing Award.
Yeah, she did a great job. It was a very emotional piece.
KHOI is proud to announce that we will host the National Grassroots Radio Conference for 2014 this summer from August 14th through 17th, an important annual event for community radio professionals, and we're very proud to bring it to Ames. The conference will be held at the KHOI building on 410 Douglas and also at the Octagon Arts Center or the old Collegiate Manufacturing Building, as we just discussed. And Food at First will provide the meals at the First Methodist Church. And we're expecting about 150 to 200 people. So we're really proud to introduce everybody to Ames and Iowa hospitality. At KHOI, we would like your participation. Here's how you can get involved. If you would, if you can, host somebody to stay at your home, or pick up travelers from the Des Moines airport, or lend a bicycle for people to use to get around town while they're here. You can serve on a planning and organizing committee for the festival. We got lots of things for you to do. And you can sponsor the conference with a donation, or you can attend the conference. I promise you, it'll be really a lot of fun and very interesting. Or on Thursday night, we're going to having a welcoming party, and you can bring a dish to the potluck party. We're going to be having a cookout in front of the station. Contact us at khoiradio@gmail.com. That's khoiradio@gmail.com. Or call us at 292-2878, or just come by the station on 410 Douglas. If you want more information about the conference, go to grc2014.net. That's grc2014.net. The conference is sponsored by KHOI and Pacifica Radio.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you'd enjoyed the show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online on our website, khoifm.org. khoifm.org. You can find the show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it. Thank you, Ron. We will also post links to information mentioned on the show. Local Talk is engineered by Richard Morrison, and our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Your participation as an audience and your generous donations help make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.